Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, clinging on, we'll have news from London, reaction here and the latest developments as Boris Johnson desperately tries to shore up his grip on Downing Street. The mediocre weather has left businesses that rely on a sunny summer really struggling. We'll hear from them and find out whether the sunshine might be on the way. Renting pensioners, lore concern on the news that more people will never own their own homes. And how to be kind. Dr. Harry Barry and Anne-Marie Craven talk to us about how to do it and the benefits of just being nice. Text us this morning, 51551. Email today, cb@rte.ie. On Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. Well, it was just 2 weeks ago that the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson was talking about serving three terms in office and staying as PM into the 2030s. This morning, though, he's fighting to stay in power until the end of this week after two of his top ministers attacked his leadership and resigned last evening. And further, more junior resignations continued overnight and into this morning. We'll have reaction and analysis to all of this in just a moment. But first, in a series of difficult interviews this morning, Johnson's new Chancellor of the Exchequer, Nadeem Zahawi, singled out former Labour Government Director of Communications, Alistair Campbell, for criticism. Here's one example of what he said.
The people egging us on to turn on one another are people like Alistair Campbell. And in my view, wherever Alistair Campbell is, any Conservative should be on the other side of the argument.
Well, I've been getting reaction this morning from Alistair Campbell, and I put it to him that it was strange to hear the new Chancellor claim that he is the person responsible for the mess that they're in.
Yeah, I think that was all a bit weird, wasn't it? Well, he seemed to think that I'm somehow coordinating the demise and the decline of Boris Johnson, which is very flattering to think that he thinks I'm capable of it. But I think it underestimates the role that Boris Johnson has played in the decline and the demise of Boris Johnson, and indeed the role of those cabinet ministers who propped him up and continue to do so, like Zahawi. Mm-hmm.
He said on Sky, the people who are egging us on to divide and to turn on one another are people like Alistair Campbell, and wherever he is, you want to be on the opposite side of the argument. Do you understand why you have been made part of all of this?
I don't, to be perfectly frank. No, I think it's, and I think most of the viewers and listeners will think, isn't that a bit weird that some bloke who left Downing Street 19 years ago is getting the, so I've got no idea, to be honest, but nothing surprises me about this government. They're utterly incompetent. They're morally, they're amoral, they're venal, they're corrupt, and everything they do goes wrong. So I think people are just baffled and by the whole thing. I mean, if you think about it, he's the new Chancellor of the Exchequer. He's on the radio, he's on the television, he could have talked about the state of the world economy, he could have talked about his a different approach that he intends to take after Rishi Sunak has gone, he could have talked about anything he wanted, and his big point was that Tories shouldn't listen to me, which I'm not sure they do listen to me that much anyway, even though, to be fair, I have been getting a lot of messages from Tories saying, please keep going because, you know, we have to get rid of this guy.
Yeah, interesting, though, that he is still there and seems absolutely determined to cling on. Zahawi, I mean, only a couple of hours in the job, I'm not sure what he could say reasonably and logically about the Exchequer this morning. But Boris Johnson, he seems to have no appetite to go at this stage.
But Claire, that's because he has no shame. He has literally no shame. He's a narcissist. I think he's probably a sociopath. He doesn't care about other people. He doesn't really have empathy for other people. He thinks about himself. And the whole of government now is convulsed day after day after day. And I think the last time I spoke on your programme, I made the point that the one thing you guaranteed about Johnson is that just as one scandal dies down, another one will emerge. That is who and what he is. He's done it all his life. And the thing is that now that he's Prime Minister, I think there comes a point where the country just thinks that, you know, the country's got massive challenges. They're not being met. They're not being faced. Politics is a game to him. It's all about media management. It's all about the next story, the next set of lies. And what you're seeing today is a number of Conservatives coming out and saying, I just can't do it anymore. And, you know, I think, look, it's a quite, as I see it, it's a question of when, not if he goes now. But the sooner he goes, the better for the country, and we start to clear up the mess that he's left.
But at the moment, right now, he has enough people standing by him to keep the charade up, if that's what you want to call it, that he is in control.
Well, he's certainly not in control, but what he can stay in the job. But what's the point of it? Nothing's being done. And look, he deliberately appointed a cabinet full of third and fourth rate people. I mean, Nadine Dorries, Suella Braverman, Dominic Raab, you know, these people wouldn't have got a job carrying Mrs. Thatcher's handbag for her. They wouldn't have got a job polishing John Major's shoes. I mean, they're just second rate people. And so the idea that these people are ever going to be cabinet ministers again once Johnson's gone, so they're clinging on with him. Mm-hmm. And if the Conservative Party had any sense, they'd sweep the lot of them out, they'd get a leader from the backbenches, and they'd try to rebuild. But, you know, what really gets my goat is they seem to underestimate the damage this is doing to the country, literally right around the world.
But just looking at the people who have resigned, and during that interview we just referred to the Chancellor on Radio 4, two more went, but, you know, fairly junior people, and we have the two senior people who have gone, and I think nine others at this stage. So where does this go from here?
I honestly don't know. You're asking me to comment as if this was a normal situation. It's not normal. Johnson's not a normal leader. This is not a normal government. Politics is no longer normal. We're in an abnormal time. But I think that, put it this way, if he does survive this, then I think we can wave goodbye to any notion that Britain is a serious country with serious politics. He's not a serious guy. He's just a clown, and he's a dangerous clown at that. So I don't know is the answer. At this stage, the only people who can get rid of him are the cabinet. It probably needs a sort of, you know, a tipping point of maybe if half a dozen of the more senior cabinet ministers went, I don't see how he survives. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he will think he can. I mean, the guy will be dragged out kicking and screaming. I hope he's dragged out in the back of a police car and he's taken off to be charged with misconduct in public office, because that's what he deserves. But we shall see. And, you know, if only maybe the Labour Party could step up a bit, and I think they could bring this government down fairly quickly. But, you know, we'll see.
Alistair Campbell, thank you for joining
us
this morning.
All the best.
Thank
Bye.
You. Well, I'm also joined now by Conservative MP for North West Leicestershire, Andrew Bridgen. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
He thinks it's weird. Alistair Campbell thinks it's weird that he was dragged into this by the new Chancellor. Here we have Alistair Campbell, hasn't been around in government influencing policy for 19 years. And in his first interview as Chancellor, his name is raised as the person responsible for all of this. Do you think it's weird?
I think it's a bit desperate by number 10. I've duelled on your programme with Alistair Campbell on numerous occasions. However, I do have some sympathy with what he's saying today. He's seen as a bit of a bogeyman by those of us on the right. The answer is, as Alistair Campbell said, that this is a matter that it can only be resolved, the Johnson leadership, by the Conservative Party itself, and deflecting and saying it's all being orchestrated by Alistair Campbell is delusional, quite honestly.
Did you have any hope that Nadeem Zahawi would come out this morning, outline a policy that might take the country forward, might take this government past this point?
I think it's fairly academic. I don't think Nadeem Zahawi will be Chancellor for more than a week or so. I'm afraid that Boris Johnson's conduct in office has pushed, well, a couple of senior cabinet members yesterday beyond their elastic limit. I think he's pushed the electorate beyond its elastic limit. And some backbenchers like myself, I mean, I lost faith in him probably 12 months ago. And he should have done what I wrote in the papers back in January. He should have gone then, and we would have avoided all this situation. But we are where we are. If the cabinet don't move against him to force him out, I will be standing for the 1922 committee. I think nominations will open tonight and the elections will be next week, and we'll change the rules and we'll remove him. I think we'll remove him before summer recess.
OK, do you agree with Alistair Campbell that it's going to take half a dozen senior ministers to turn on him now for cabinet to get rid of him?
I think so, but the fact that they didn't go yesterday when they had every opportunity makes it, that seems quite unlikely. I think we'll still have a trickle of junior ministers leaving. I mean, I think I did say he's got more vacancies in his government now than an out of season seaside guest house.
Yeah, I see Robin Walker's gone, Will Quince and Laura Trott, while those two last two, while Nadeem Zahawi was on air with BBC Radio 4 this morning. You mentioned the elections to the 1922 committee. How long will that whole process take if that's the route that the Conservative Party decide to go down?
We won't know until Sir Graham Brady announces the process tonight at 5 o'clock. To the party. It's normally a week. It could be curtailed. But I mean, that's the ultimate backstop that will remove the Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. I think that will encourage further resignations from within the government, which will continue to undermine his position. Boris Johnson needs to appreciate the game's up, the party's over, for the good of the country, for the good of our Parliament, and for the good of the Conservative Party. He needs to go with a modicum of decency now, or we will have to throw him out. The country, our country deserves better than we've had. Our Parliament deserves better, and the Conservative Party deserves better than this.
Mm-hmm. Is the chat amongst you and your colleagues on the backbenches now around this rule change with the 1922 committee and how quickly you can do it?
Yes, and I think once the executive is reformed, an 18-strong executive, I think it could be done very, very quickly. And quite honestly, Claire, if we had 148 of us voted no confidence 4 or 5 weeks ago, if we set the bar at 180 letters, that's half the parliamentary party, a majority, we would get the letters in 24 hours mm-hmm. now.
Do you think we're looking at an election? Because you'd wonder how any new Conservative Party leader and Prime Minister could have a mandate after all of this to lead your country.
I don't think we need a general election. We are the majority party. We've got a very healthy majority in the House of Commons. And we need to get a new leader. And we're going to face probably some by-elections coming up. And I'm very confident that with a new leader, we can hold those seats.
Who should that be?
Claire, I don't get involved in that level of speculation.
We had a chat the last time you were on about Liz Truss. Have you decided whether you'd support Liz Truss for leader?
Liz Truss has sworn undying loyalty to the Prime Minister, as has Priti Patel. So we'll see where that takes them politically. I think the next leader of the Conservative Party has got to have integrity, courage and show leadership. And anyone who stays in Boris Johnson's cabinet now, they're not showing to me, and I think the party or the country, any of those qualities. So I think they're ruling themselves out.
Yeah, Alistair Campbell said as well that this cabinet is third rate. Nadine Dorries, Suella Braverman, Dominic Raab. He named so many people, said they're not fit to carry Thatcher's handbag, not fit to polish John Major's shoes. It sounds today like you'd agree with that.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. What I will say is that Boris Johnson appears to have surrounded himself with sycophants when that's not a proper cabinet. He has kept the grass mown very, very low around him so that those in number 10 can say, well, it's all right that Ian Boris isn't very good, but there's nobody else. In every private soldier's backpack, there is a field marshal's baton, Claire, if you're willing to look for it.
All right, Andrew Bridgen, thank you for joining us this morning. Now, for more on all of this, I'm joined on the line by Helen Lewis, staff writer at The Atlantic. John Tong is with us as well, British and Irish politics professor at the University of Liverpool. You're both very welcome and thank you for joining us. Helen, I want to start with this comment from the former Chief Whip, Andrew Mitchell, MP, who was speaking on Newsnight on the BBC last night. He said Boris Johnson's premiership had come to an end and he gave this description of events.
It's a bit like the death of Rasputin. He's been poisoned, stabbed. He's been shot. His body's been dumped in the freezing.
But don't you need resilience in your
Prime
Minister?
Dumped in the freezing river, and still he lives.
Still he lives, Helen. But for how long?
Well, I'm always up for a comparison with Rasputin at this time of the morning. So thank you for that. I think it would be absolutely extraordinary to carry on. One of the things that is most striking to me about the resignation letters that are trickling in is the wide variety of criticisms that are coming in. So you have the straightforward Sajid Javid-style criticism saying that this latest affair, you know, appearing to mislead people about what happened with the deputy chief whip, that was the breaking point. You have Rishi Sunak, the former chancellor, saying, I couldn't agree with you on economic policy. You have Robert Halfen, the very well-respected chair and normally quietly loyal conservative backbencher, saying, you know, I just think there is no policy delivery in this government. We're not doing anything. It's a mirage, I think is the word that he used. And you get people like Robin Walker, again, from my parents' home seat of Worcester in the Midlands, who is, you know, sitting on a swing seat that was Labour under Tony Blair. It's been Conservative since then. And the criticisms that he's voicing are, you know, I just can't go on like this. So there are people who are also, you know, really thinking their seats are at risk. So, you know, the what's interesting to me about this is that this is not a factional breakdown where there is a kind of one ideological faction of the party thinks he needs to go. There are a kind of, there's Boris Johnson and his kind of clique of supporters, who I think, as Alistair Campbell rightly noted, don't feel confident they would get into anyone else's cabinet. And then there is dissatisfaction with him, both on policy grounds and moral grounds and electoral grounds, from across the rest of the party. And that's what ultimately will make it very difficult for him to fight the next election.
All right. And John, I'm sure you heard at least some of what Andrew Bridgen has to say. He said Zahawi, he believes, won't be Chancellor for more than a week. He's talking about the rule change at the 1922 committee in order to get Boris Johnson out. Do you think that's what will happen?
Yes, I do. I thought Andrew Bridgen was spot on in much of what he said. All eyes now on the 1922 committee executive elections, which will be a pro versus anti-Johnson battle. I'd expect the anti-Johnson forces to win and dominate the places on the 18-strong executive committee to which Andrew Bridgen referred. And that can potentially trigger then a second vote of confidence in Boris Johnson, because it's quite clear, I think, that Boris Johnson isn't going to go via an informal route. He's refusing to resign despite the resignation of two cabinet heavyweights yesterday and a whole trickle of more junior resignations in the last 12 hours. So if he can't be dragged out by informal means, then I think some on the backbenches have taken the view, let's take him out by the formal route. And the formal route will be to change the rules of the 1922 committee to allow a second vote of confidence. And, you know, given that the tide was already at 148 MPs, 41% of the party last June, only a month ago, then, you know, clearly, given what has happened subsequently with those cabinet resignations, with those spectacular by-election defeats, given that Lord MacDonald called Boris Johnson out spectacularly in terms of his integrity yesterday, then you'd expect probably a vote of confidence in Boris Johnson that Boris Johnson would actually lose it.
You just wonder, though, as more and more of the junior ministers resign, and that's happening as we speak, whether the support that left in the cabinet, the senior cabinet ministers, whether they'll start to waver now too?
Well, that's quite possible. I think there may be more cabinet resignations to follow. There's still one or two ministers who have not declared publicly for Boris Johnson, and that in the end could finish Boris Johnson off. He's not going to resign on the basis of a number of parliamentary private secretaries who most people have never heard of quitting, but a further heavyweight cabinet resignation would be very, very interesting indeed, and we wait to hear people like Michael Gove to see whether they come out in favour of Boris Johnson. But it's quite clear, it's only a couple of weeks ago Boris Johnson was talking, albeit lightheartedly, about going on until the 2030s and having a third term. Mm-hmm. Frankly, this is for the birds. This government is collapsing. I mean, it's one thing surviving a vote of confidence, but when your government is actually collapsing around you, and it's actually difficult for Boris Johnson to fill the government now. You need about 150 to 160 MPs for the payroll vote. Well, if you take away 148 rebels, and that's a month ago from the 358, you're down to 210 already, and a lot of that 210 will have gone over to the anti-Johnson camp since then. So yes, it's actually difficult to fill the positions with those who are actually loyal to the Prime Minister.
And Helen, it seems that the straw that broke the camel's back was the fact that more ministers wheeled out over the weekend to defend the indefensible, to defend the untrue, let's call it what it is. That has happened before, though.
Yeah, I think it happened over Owen Paterson, if you remember, had to step down because of his improper lobbying activities. It happened arguably over Partygate. People were sent out to defend lines, which I find very hard to believe were true. And I think that has been a consistent feature of Boris Johnson's premiership right from 2019 onwards. You know, that he won the leadership, by the way, by saying, I will get Brexit done by October the 31st, do or die. And he didn't. Actually, it took until January. Now, that, you might say, is a very small delay. But actually, what it proved is that he was willing just to say things which he had no way of achieving in order to get what he wanted. And I think that has been the kind of consistent motif of his premiership. And what's happened is he's sent people out and they felt like mugs. And actually, he's also having a much rougher ride from the press consistently, because, again, if you can't trust what the Downing Street spokesman says to you, then that relationship becomes ever more adversarial. Obviously, journalists should treat anything the politician tells them as extremely provisional, but those relationships are, you know, generally supposed to be the Downing Street spokesman speaking with the authority of Downing Street should be telling you things that you can rely on. Okay. And so everybody feels like they've been taken for a mug by him.
Well, I just want to go back to Boris Johnson speaking yesterday evening. This was before the resignations came, and he'd apologised for appointing Chris Pincher to the government after being told about the misconduct complaint. He admitted that he had been told about the complaint in 2019. Let's have a listen.
I think it was a mistake, and I apologise for it. I think in hindsight it was the wrong thing to do. I apologise to everybody who's been badly affected by it. And I just want to make absolutely clear that there's no place in this government for anybody who is predatory or who abuses their position of power.
Did you want to joke, though, Pincher by name, Pincher by nature?
Well, what I can tell you is that if I look at the background of this and why I regret it so much, is that about 3 years ago, there was a complaint made against Chris Pincher in the Foreign Office. The complaint was cleared up. He apologised. It was raised with me orally. There was I was briefed on what had happened. Mm-hmm. And you know, if I had my time again, I would think back on it and recognise that he wasn't going to learn any okay. lesson. He wasn't going to change.
That's Chris Mason from the BBC speaking to Boris Johnson yesterday evening. John, there was really no comeback from that, but I have a question from a listener for you. What are the chances of Boris Johnson calling a snap election so that if he goes, he brings the party down with him?
Well, he may threaten that, but I don't think it's a credible thing. I think that Conservative ministers would simply stop him doing that. You know, he can call an election, but there'd be no one there standing behind him if he called an election. So I just don't think that's a viable tactic. He can threaten an election and threaten to take the party down with him, but I think he'd be stopped by those around him who would simply grab the steering wheel from him at that point. So, yes, I understand that the premise of the question, but I just don't think it will happen. But, you know, there'd be so many Conservative MPs who would lose their seats if an election was to be called now. It would be madness.
Okay, what's your take on that, Helen?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was some talk about it because obviously Keir Starmer, the Labour leader, is currently under investigation by Durham Police and has said that if he's fined for an event that he was at over lockdown, he would resign too. So they thought it was very clever to float this. But look, you know, Dominic Raab, the Deputy Prime Minister, somebody whose loyalty to Boris Johnson has been instrumental to him staying in Downing Street, his seat would, if an election were held today on all the polling, go to the Lib Dems. And there are many other Conservative MPs who are in that position. You know, do you really want to go into an election when people's energy bills have just risen, they're worried about them rising again in the autumn, they don't feel the economic outlook is good, and heaping on top of that the idea that there is an unresolved scandal around the Prime Minister? I have to say, I think I agree with John that at that point, I think the Rasputin murderers would kind of reanimate themselves and bring out some more poison cakes.
Well, it's Wednesday today. Will he be there by the end of the week, Helen?
I think that's more probable. These things do take a lot longer than perhaps people realise. I remember the death throes of Theresa May, which, if you remember, went on for actually months. And, you know, as we've discussed, the mechanisms for getting rid of him, if you can't shame him out of office, then actually what we need is a rule change, and that will take some time. So it is entirely possible that he is still here into next week, yeah.
Helen, thank you very much for joining us. Helen Lewis there from The Atlantic and John Tong, Professor of British and Irish Politics. And we'll get some reaction from the Irish government after this.
Text 51551, today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.